want the Clave to think of me as any more of a downworlder than they already do. Aline and Alec exchanged a glance. Just because Valentine's crusade for Shadowhunter purity had been defeated didn't mean the bigotry he represented had ended. There were people who would always believe Helen was tainted by her downworlder blood. "There's nothing wrong with downworlders," said Alec.
"Tell the Clave that," Helen said.
Aline said unexpectedly loudly,
"The Clave is wrong."
Helen looked up at her, and Aline swallowed.
"I know how they think," she continued. "I didn't shake a downworlder's hand once, and then he became one of the..."
Aline darted another glance at Alec.
"One of the downworlder heroes of the war. I was wrong. The way they think is wrong."
"It has to change," Alec said. "It will change."
"Will it change in time for my brothers and sisters?" Helen demanded. "I don't think so. I'm the oldest of seven. My brother Mark has the same fairy mother as I do. The others have a Shadowhunter mother. My father had only just married a Shadowhunter woman when Mark and I were sent to their home. That Shadowhunter woman could have scorned us. She loved us instead. She was so good to me when I was small. She always treated me exactly like her own. I want my family to be proud of me. My brother Julian is so smart. He could be consul one day, like your mother is now. I can't stand in the way of what he could accomplish, what they all could accomplish."
As though they weren't in imminent danger of their lives, Aline went over to Helen and took one of her hands.
"You're on the council, right?"
she asked.
"And you're only 18. You're already making them proud. You're a great Shadowhunter."
Helen opened her eyes and gazed at Aline. Her fingers curled around Aline's. Hope glowed in Helen's face, then flickered and failed.
"I'm not a great Shadowhunter," she said. "But I want to be. If I'm great, if the Clave is impressed with me, then I belong. I'm so afraid they will decide I don't."
"I understand," said Aline.
Alec did too. He and Aline and Helen all exchanged a look, united against the same lonely fear.
"I'm sorry,"
Helen whispered, her voice floating to him soft as smoke.
"There's nothing to be sorry for," said Alec. "I'm sorry I didn't tell anyone what we were doing or where we were going, and now we're going to die," said Helen.
"Well," said Alec, scanning the treetops.
"When you put it that way, it does sound bad."
He spotted a section of a wall of fire that was sputtering slightly where it ran over a swampy portion of ground. The flames there were a little lower than the other barrier walls.
"Just in case we do die," Aline said. "I know we just met Helen, but..."
"We're not going to die," Alec broke in. "Helen, how high can you jump?" Helen blinked and came back to herself. She set her shoulders and studied the flames.
"I can't jump that high."
"You don't have to," said Alec. "Look." He charged at the space between two of the pillars and, as before, the flames bent to block him.
"So?"
said Aline. "So," said Alec. "I do that again, and then one of you jumps the flames while they're lowered to block me." Helen surveyed the flames.
"That's still going to be a hard jump."
Her face hardened with resolve.
"I'll do it." "I can do it," said Aline.
Helen put her hand on Aline's shoulder.
"But I got us into this, and I'm going to get us out."
"You'll only have a second or two," said Alec, backing up to make the run. "You'll have to be right behind me."
"I will be," Helen said.
An instant before Alec started toward the wall, Aline yelled,
"Wait! What if it's worse on the other side of the flames?"
"That," said Helen, brandishing yet another seraph blade,
"is why I am heavily armed. Satchel."
A white familiar light appeared. The glow of Adamus, a reassuring rebuke to the red demonic flames around them. Alec smiled to himself. He was beginning to like Helen. Then he started to run. He dove for the ground and felt the heat of the flames as they lowered to block him from escape. He stayed down, rolling, and he heard Aline give a cheer. He sprang up and brushed the dirt off of himself. There was a small silence.
"Helen?"
Aline called uncertainly.
"Demons! Fire demons! They're demons!"
Helen yelled back breathlessly.
"The pillars are demons! I'm fighting one of them now!"
Alec only now noticed
that one of the flame pillars that had bent to stop him hadn't returned to its original position. Instead, he realized, he was looking at the back of a huge humanoid form made of flame, on the other side of which, presumably, was Helen. He and Aline looked at each other. Alec uncertainly drew his bow and fired an arrow directly into the center of the next pillar. The pillar erupted into motion, splitting and shaping itself into a humanoid figure that Alec recognized as a cherith demon. The demon roared, flames like 100 awful tongues in its gaping maw, and charged at Alec, fiery claws extended. It moved with the speed of a wildfire blaze, closing the distance in the blink of an eye. Alec twisted away from the claws, trying to roll in the direction of the gap between his demon and Helen's, just managing to avoid being disemboweled and flambéed. The world rattled as he hit the ground hard and skidded several feet. Only the sting of a falling ember on his cheek snapped him back to consciousness. He could only watch, dazed, as a streak of fire hurtled at him through the dark. The demon was coming back for another round. Then Aline was there, slashing so quickly with her daggers that her arms were a blur. The angel blades had the effect of water on the demon fire, turning it into steam whenever they passed through it. One slash across its lower torso, one up the middle, and one to lop off its flaming arms, and the cherith demon disintegrated into a puddle of magma, ichor, and steam. Aline stood outlined by orange sparks. She tucked one dagger under her arm and offered Alec her free hand. Helen, singed but unhurt, joined them, appearing through the fading flames of the first demon as it fell into cinders. Together they turned to the other cherifs, which had all now taken their usual humanoid shape. Alec dropped to one knee, and three arrows streaked in the air in rapid succession, striking one cherith demon in the chest, its wounds spouting jets of flame. It roared and turned toward him, leaving a trail of fire in its wake. He loosed two more arrows, ducked and spun out of the monster's path, and finished it off with one more arrow in the eye. The demon collapsed like a burning house. Helen and Aline stood back to back in the dark of the forest clearing, the glitter of infernal sparks and the glow from angelic blades surrounding them. Helen finished off another demon with a spin move that separated its torso from its lower half. Alec carefully made his way around the melee, keeping himself at a distance until he had a clear angle. One arrow took off a cherith demon's arm, then several more caused it to tip over, even as it tried to charge Aline. One downward stab of a dagger ended it. Helen wore down the last demon with a series of quick slashes, puncturing its magma skin until it was shooting small jets of flame from all sides. Aline joined in, ducking a flaming fist and dashing past the demon to sink her blade into its back. As soon as the last of the cherith demons fell, the fire was gone, leaving black scars on the earth and gray smoke drifting into the sky. There were still a few branches burning, and pockets of ground smoldering, but there too the fire seemed to be slowly dying.
"Helen," said Aline, panting. "Are you all right?"
"I am,"
Helen answered.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," said Alec.
"Not that anyone asked."
He stowed his bow and winced as he moved, but decided he could bear the pain. There was no time to celebrate their victory. He had to figure out where Magnus was right away. Helen clucked her tongue.
"You were not fine."
Alec was startled to recognize the expression on her face, half exasperation and half concern, which he knew he wore constantly whenever Jace or Isabel was reckless. She really was an oldest sister. Helen sat him down and pulled up his shirt, grimacing when she saw the red, blistered wound. She took out her steely, pressed it over the injury, and began to draw in Irazi. The outlines of her strokes glimmered gold and sank into his skin. Alec sucked in air through his clenched teeth as ripples of cold strummed his nerves. When the rune's effects had subsided, there was only a raised red patch of skin left on his chest.
"I was slightly distracted by the walls of flame and our impending deaths," said Aline. "But Alec, did you say that the leader of the Crimson Hand told us to be here?"
He nodded. "There was a warlock who traveled with us named Qin Yang Zheng. She said she was a reformed Crimson Hand cultist and was trying to put an end to them. But I think she's the leader we've been searching for. We need to find Magnus. He's in danger."
"Wait," said Helen. So you're saying that your boyfriend isn't the leader of the Crimson Hand, but you have another travel companion who is? Like, do you always insist on traveling with cultists?
Alec glanced at Aline for support, but she only spread her hands, as if to indicate that she felt Helen was making a fair point.
No, I always insist on traveling with cult leaders, said Alec.
He put his hand in the back pocket of his jeans and drew out the silk scarf he'd untied from Magnus's throat this morning. He remembered that Magnus had kissed his wrist as he loosened the knot.
Alec clenched the silk material in his fist and drew a tracking rune on the back of his hand. It took a moment for the rune to take effect, and then he saw rows of figures all in white and unclimbable walls. To his shock, he felt fear. He couldn't imagine Magnus being afraid of anything. Perhaps the fear he felt was his own. He also felt a pull, his heart now a compass leading him in a specific direction, back to Rome. No, not the city, but south of it.
I found him, Alec said. We have to go.
I hate to mention this, but we did just escape a death trap, said Aline. How do we know we wouldn't be walking right into another?
Helen put her hand on Alec's wrist and held tightly.
We can't go, she said. I've already made too many mistakes, going off on my own and someone died as a result. We got lucky here. We need reinforcements. We need to go back to the Rome Institute and explain everything.
My priority is Magnus, said Alec.
He knew Helen was only trying to do the right thing. Alec remembered his own deep frustration when his Parabatai had started to chase a girl around on all kinds of lunatic, death-defying missions. It felt very different now that he was the one in Jace's shoes.
Alec, said Helen, I know you don't want to get Magnus in trouble.
I'll go without you if I have to, said Alec.
He couldn't go to the Rome Institute. For one thing, he didn't want to answer a lot of uncomfortable questions. If they were suspicious enough, they might send for the mortal sword to force him to tell the truth. For another thing, he didn't have the time for any of that. He felt very certain that Magnus was in danger already. He needed to keep Magnus a secret, and he needed to hurry. He wished Aline and Helen would come with him, but he didn't even know how to ask. He couldn't demand that kind of faith from them. He had done nothing to deserve it.
Of course you want to protect him, said Helen. If he's not guilty, I want to protect him. We're shadow hunters. But the best way to protect him and defeat the Crimson Hand is to use every resource at our disposal.
No, Alec said. You don't understand. Think of your family, Helen. You would die for them. I know. I would die for my family, for Isabel, for Jace, he exhaled, and for Magnus. I would die for him, too. It would be a privilege to die for him.
He shook off Helen's hold on his wrist and started off in the direction the tracking rune guided him. Aline darted into his path.
Aline, Alec said with vehemence, I will not risk Magnus's life. I will not report to the Institute. I will not wait for reinforcements. I am going to get Magnus. Get out of my way.
I'm not in your way, said Aline.
I'm coming with you.
What?
Helen cried. Aline's reply sounded anything but confident, but it was firm.
I trust Alec. I'm with him.
Alec did not know what to say. Fortunately, there was no time to talk about emotions. He nodded at Aline, and they surged together out of the clearing and toward the forest path.
Wait,
said Helen. Aline turned back toward her. Alec barely glanced over his shoulder. Helen's eyes were shut.
Go to Europe, Helen, they said. Can't be a homebody forever, Helen. Get out of L.A. Soak up some culture. Maybe date somebody. Nobody said a cult and its demons will chase you around Europe. And then a lunatic Lightwood would lead you to your doom? This is the worst travel year anybody has ever had. Well, I guess I'll see you sometime, said Aline, looking stricken. I'm leaving, said Alec.
Helen sighed and made a gesture of despair with her seraph blade.
All right, lunatic Lightwood. Lead the way. Let's go get your man.
Chapter 24, Cursed Daughter.
The pit turned out to be an existing part of the villa, not a new addition by the cult. A circular stone amphitheater sunk into the ground. Stone terraces led down to a grassy, circular lawn at its center, on which an elevated stage of rough wooden planks had been constructed. Two sets of stone stairs, opposite each other, allowed for passage from level ground to the terraces or down to the lawn, and along each terrace, wooden benches had been set up. The stage was plain, except for several awkwardly planted moonflowers in wildly crisscrossing rows. Most of them must have been crushed by the wooden stage. Cultists had no appreciation for the gardener's hard work, Magnus thought. The rows upon rows of benches were filled with cultists. Every seat was taken, and there were more people crowding behind them. Magnus supposed if he had to be a show, at least it was standing room only. The cultists sat silent and still in their seats. They were dressed alike, in hideous fedoras and casual white business suits, with white shirts and white ties. The cult's cleaning bills must have been astronomical. The two men, half-escorting, half-dragging Magnus, brought him down the stairs, then threw him roughly onto the lawn next to the stage. Magnus picked himself up from his hands and knees, waved at the crowd, and bowed with a flourish. He did not want to die in this banal pit, surrounded by the pallid ghosts of past mistakes, but if he had to die, he planned to die with style. He would not let any of these people see him crawl. Xinyan stepped onto the lawn, her clothes starry white in the night's gloom, and pointed in Magnus's direction. Bernard, who had followed behind, lifted a sword to Magnus's throat.
"Robe him in white," said Xinyan, "so the mark of the crimson hand will show upon him."
Magnus crossed his arms and raised his voice and his eyebrows.
"You could poison me and throw me in a dungeon. You can beat me and even sacrifice me to a greater demon. But I draw the line at wearing a white suit for an evening event."
Bernard jabbed the blade toward Magnus's throat. Magnus stared down at the curved sword in contempt. He put a finger on the sharp tip and flicked it to the side.
"You're not going to stab me. I'm the main attraction. Unless you guys plan to sacrifice Xinyan to Asmodeus."
Xinyan's eyes were twin hollows of hate. Bernard gave a nervous little jump and took a hasty step back. Several cultists held Magnus still as Xinyan leaped toward him, delivering a spinning wheel kick to his chest and another to his stomach, doubling him over. As he struggled to keep his feet and not be sick, they forced him into a white robe. Bernard shoved him upright, gripping him by the arms. Magnus gazed out at the implacable crowd through pain-hazed eyes.
"Behold the great poison!" Xinyan shouted. "Our founder, the prophet who brought us together and then led us astray."
"It's just an honor to be nominated," Magnus gasped.
He surveyed his surroundings closely, though he had little hope for escape. He noticed a number of Rom demons guarding the tunnel entrances like ushers. Overhead, several large flying creatures swooped by. It was too dark to see what they were, but they were definitely demons of some sort. Unless dinosaurs had returned.
"There is no hope for escape," said Xinyan. "Who was looking for escape?" asked Magnus. "Allow me to compliment you on the high production values of your demonic ritual. I trust there's a full-service bar."
"Quiet, great poison,"
said the cultist on his left, who had a tight, not particularly friendly grip on his shoulder.
"I'm just suggesting," Magnus said.
"Maybe we can settle this in a civilized manner, by which I mean in a conversation over drinks." Bernard hit him in the face. Magnus tasted blood as Xinyan's eyes gleamed with pleasure.
"Guess not," Magnus said.
"Gladiatorial demonic death ritual it is, then." Xinyan's voice became magically enhanced, thundering over his, booming across the entire amphitheater.
"The great poison is a failed prophet of false teachings. Before you, my brothers and sisters, I shall strike him down and assume my place as your rightful leader, and then I will offer this unworthy fool as a sacrifice to my father. Asmodeus will rise in glory. The daughter of Asmodeus will lead you.
The crowd stirred from their eerie silence. The cultists began to chant.
Ker said daughter. Ker said daughter.
Magnus was dragged onto their little stage. Through the haze of pain and disorientation, he noticed that the cultists were careful not to trample the lines of moonflowers that circled and ran underneath the wooden platform. Bernard had just completed salting a pentagram into the center of the stage. Rough hands grabbed Magnus by the elbow and threw him into the pentagram. Magnus got himself up into a sitting position, legs crossed under him, and tried to look casual. Bernard began to struggle through the incantation that would seal the pentagram. After a while, Magnus yawned loudly.
Need any help?
Bernard's face flushed.
Be quiet, great poison. I know what I'm doing.
If you did, you wouldn't be here, trust me. This was going to be an insultingly weak and fragile pentagram. If Magnus had his magic, he could have dispelled it with a breath. Bernard finished his spell and scurried backward as showers of sparks flew up from each point of the pentagram. Magnus waved his arms around to keep the embers away, and after a moment, a few of the cultists realized that the fire could be a problem given the wooden stage, and began waving their arms and their hats at the sparks to disperse them. The ritual was beginning in earnest. Xinyan held out her hand, and one of the cultists put her Samgakdo in it. She strode forward, the blade pointed at Magnus's throat. She jerked her hand, nicking him just below the Adam's apple, a shallow cut and a twinge of pain. Magnus looked down and saw crimson dripping onto his white robes.
Do you have any club soda?
He said to Xinyan.
These stains are going to set unless we get to them quickly.
You will be blotted out, said Xinyan. You will be forgotten. First, you will know what you have lost. Time to remember, great poison.
Xinyan began her own incantation. The crowd resumed chanting Curse Said Daughter more quietly than before. Black clouds gathered above the amphitheater, and lightning cracked around the villa once, twice, three times. The clouds began to swirl in a dizzying circle overhead, forming a vortex that, Magnus guessed, was the beginning of the link between this world and the other. A voice in Magnus's head, dreadful as a door opening onto pitch dark, said,
Yes, time to remember. Time to remember everything.
A harsh, unpleasant white light appeared at the center of the swirling clouds, and the tip of a funnel began to materialize. Streaks of smoke or insects or black static swarmed the white light. The tip of the funnel began to descend from the sky directly toward Magnus, who waited helplessly for the storm to reach him. He closed his eyes. He did not want to die like this, by the hand of a raging, wounded warlock, in front of misguided and badly dressed fools, with all the stupid mistakes of his past coming to swallow the possibility of his future. If he did die, he did not want regret to be the last thing he felt. So he thought about Alec. Alec, with his heartbreaking contradictions, shy and brave, relentless and tender. Alec's midnight blue eyes, and the look on his face when they had their first kiss. And their last. Magnus had not thought today's kiss would be their last. But nobody ever did know when the last kiss came. Magnus saw all his dearest friends, all his lost mortals, and all those who would live on. His mother, who he could never make laugh. Etta of the beautiful voice that had kept him dancing. His first shadow hunter friend, Will. Ragnar, always the teacher who had gone on before. Katerina, her healing hands and endless grace. Tessa of the steadfast heart and great courage.
Raphael, who would sneer at this sentiment.
His Clary, the first and last child Magnus had ever watched grow up, and the warrior woman he knew she would become.
And then Alec again.
Alec running up the steps of Magnus's brownstone in Brooklyn to ask him out. Alec holding on to him in cold water, offering Magnus all his strength. The stunning surprise of Alec's warm mouth, his sure, strong hands in the hall of his angelic ancestors. Alec shielding downworlders at the palazzo in Venice, coming for Magnus through a cloud of demons, trying to shield Magnus through every land and at every turn. Alec choosing Magnus over the Clave every time, without hesitation. Alec turning against the laws he had always lived by to protect Magnus and keep his secrets. Magnus had never thought he would need protecting. He had thought it would make him weak. He had been wrong. Dread died away. Shaking, hardly able to move, with darkness bearing down upon him, Magnus felt only gratitude for his life. He wasn't ready for death, but if it came today, he would face it with his head held high and Alexander Lightwood's name on his lips. The pain hit, shattering and abrupt. Magnus screamed.
Chapter 25, Chains of Magic. Alec took the Maserati and followed where the tracking rune led, up a winding road that spiraled around a mountain. Helen and Aline yelled at him to drive slower. He did not, taking the curves at breakneck speed. Helen smacked his shoulder and then stared.
"By the angel," she said. "A tornado."
It did look like a tornado. A crazy-looking tornado, black spirals of cloud with a harsh white glow at its center, whirling in the sky directly above a crumbling villa perched atop the mountain. It illuminated the night sky with a sickly gleam. They stopped the car halfway up the mountain and stared at it.
"You think this is the place?"
Aline said dryly.
"I'm so glad we didn't get any silly
reinforcements,"
muttered Helen. The churning funnel's menace was punctuated by periodic lightning bolts splitting the sky. When they did, thunder shook the air and the ground below them, unnatural in its closeness.
"I have to get Magnus out of there,"
said Alec. He gunned the Maserati's engine, sending it hurtling up the road. Helen and Aline gripped each other for dear life as the car whipped back and forth up the hairpin turns. At the end of the road were massive iron gates through which they could see the villa's main building. On either side of the gates, high stone ramparts extended in great curves around and then behind the building, circumscribing the grounds. One gate was open, but two cult members were guarding the entrance, both wearing white suits and hats that might as well have glowed in the dark. Alec left the car behind the road's last curve, where it couldn't be spotted from the gates. They climbed out of the car and crept to 20 feet away, without either guard noticing. On cue, Aline stepped out of their cover and waved. As they guessed, the cultist's leader had made sure that a glamour wouldn't work on the Crimson Hand, but they planned to use being visible to their advantage. In the split second the cultists looked her way, Alec pegged the guard on the left with a well-thrown rock, striking the man between the eyes and knocking him out. When the other guard turned to see what had happened to his friend, Helen charged, her body a blur as she sped across the road and tackled him to the ground. One elbow later, he was out too. They quickly trussed the cultists up and stowed them behind a row of bushes before continuing onto the villa grounds. The front driveway was packed with cars, parked haphazardly. Alec counted two more cultists manning the front doors and a handful milling around the driveway, but there was surprisingly little other activity.
"Where did they all go?"
he wondered.
"Wherever the tracking rune leads, probably," said Helen.
Alec led them around the side of the villa, hugging the outer ramparts, until they reached the back of the main house. The ramparts continued back, but dense, overgrown gardens gone to seed blocked their ability to see farther into the grounds. He checked the tracking rune once more and pointed at the gardens.
"Through there."
"Great news," said Aline. "That place looks like a safety hazard."
Helen nodded.
"Straight to the death tornado it is."
Once the three of them were in the gardens, they were invisible from view from the house. They had to hack their way through thorny vines and tightly packed branches, but the wind howled and thrashed so loudly that Alec was sure no one could hear them. They crept down the length of the estate, moving from cover to cover until the garden gave way to a clearing. The clearing ended in the ruins of a high stone wall. Aline sucked in her breath. A massive bipedal lizard with a row of serrated teeth across its forehead was marching back and forth in front of the wall. It had a second lower mouth as well, full of dripping tusks. Its whipping tail was edged with razors. Alec squinted. Rahab demon. He had fought several of those just a few months ago. Aline shuddered and shut her eyes.
I hate Rahab demons, she said passionately. I fought one in a war, and I hate them.
Maybe it hasn't seen us, suggested Ellen.
It smelled us,
Aline said grimly. Alec noticed that Aline's fingers were trembling and her knuckles were white on the hilt of her blade. Helen reached out a hand and placed it on Aline's. Aline smiled at her gratefully, her grip relaxing. Helen spoke softly.
Maybe the wind will carry away our scent.
The lizard-like demon raised its snout, licked the air with its tongue, and looked their way. Alec grimly drew his bow.
Well, our luck so far is holding.
Without further preamble, he punched an arrow into the demon's chest, making it stagger. Before the arrow had even struck its mark, Helen was on the move, covering the distance to the Rahab in a heartbeat. A slash to its leg just above the knee caused it to bellow in pain, and then Helen danced nimbly out of the way as it swiped at her with its massive claws. Quicker than seemed possible, its long tail swept the ground, cutting Helen's feet out from under her. Aline had closed the distance herself and now leaped and buried her daggers in the demon's back. The demon emitted a high-pitched, nearly inaudible whine. Aline yanked one of her daggers out and jammed the blade into its neck. The demon reared and lashed at her with a whip-like tongue. Aline ducked under the tongue and held on for dear life, slicing at the demon with a viciousness Alec had never seen from her before, leaving the demon bleeding from 100 wounds. She finally dove off, somersaulting onto the soft grass and back to her feet. This gave Alec the clear shot he needed. He took quick aim and buried one more arrow in its exposed neck. With a great crash, it fell to the ground and vanished, leaving a sick scent in the air and lashings of ichor on the trampled grass along the stone wall. Aline went over to Helen and offered her a hand. Helen hesitated for a moment, then clasped Aline's hand and let Aline help her to her feet.
Thanks for the assist, said Helen.
Alec put his bow away and leapt the underbrush at the edge of the garden, joining them at the wall.
You two make a pretty good team.
Helen looked pleased.
We do,
she agreed.
You helped, too,
Aline added loyally. Alec raised an eyebrow at her. Alec retrieved his arrows from the ground where the demon had vanished. He led them to the lowest part of the ruined stone wall, still well above their heads, but easily scalable by trained shadow hunters. On the other side of the wall was a ramshackle building, smaller than the main house. In front of it were 6 cultists, armed to the teeth and glowing like white neon in their pale suits.
The tracking rune says through here,
Alec said quietly, pointing to the doors of the ramshackle building ahead.
Right through the cultists, said Helen wearily. Of course.
It's all right,
Aline said, putting her hand to her weapons belt.
I'm in a stabby mood.
Okay, Alec said. If we spread out...
He broke off as the scream tore the night in half. It was a long scream of pain and horror, wrenching and deep, cutting into his soul. The voice was unmistakable. He let out a cry of dismay of his own before he realized what he was doing.
Alec,
Helen said in his ear, gripping his sleeve with her small hand.
Stay calm. We'll get to him together.
Magnus's cry ended, but Alec had already forgotten all his strategy, all his plans. He charged forward, wielding his bow like a staff. The cultists turned in surprise, but he was already on them. He jabbed the nearest in the abdomen as he passed, then spun and twirled his bow overhead, striking the second in the face. The third cultist threw a punch that Alec caught with his free hand. Alec turned his wrist and twisted the man's body at a severe angle, then slammed him into the ground. Fighting mundanes was too easy. Helen and Aline jogged up to him, each holding a blade. Catching sight of two more angry shadow hunters joining the one who had decimated their associates, the remaining three cultists dropped their weapons and fled.
"That's right," Aline called after them. "And stop worshipping demons!"
"You all right, Alec?" said Helen. Alec breathed hard. "Working out some aggression."
"It's the shadow hunter way,"
agreed Aline.
"I won't be all right until we get to Magnus," said Alec.
Helen nodded.
"Then let's go."
Stepping over the cultists, they cut through the crumbling building, empty save for dust and spiders, and burst out the other side into an amphitheater. It was ancient-looking, sunk into the earth, terraced with stone. Along the tiers, an audience of Crimson Hand members, all dressed in the same white outfits, watched the action. A long flight of stone steps led down to a large wooden platform placed on the grass, acting as a stage. Alec's eyes found Magnus immediately, on his knees, with his head hung low, in the center of a pentagram of salt. Xin Yun stood over him, a sword in her hand. The maelstrom they'd seen from a distance was up close now, descending like a funnel directly toward Magnus, swirling with ash and light. The whole stage seemed about to be swept into the maelstrom or burned wholly away. Alec ran straight for it. Chapter 26 Old Sins. The earth shook, the air pulsed, and Magnus felt a thousand needles puncture him from all sides. A force took hold of his mind and twisted it, squeezing it and kneading it like dough into an entirely different shape. He screamed. Pain washed the world white. When Magnus blinked away the dazzle, he saw a small room with plaster ceilings and heard a familiar voice calling his name.
Magnus?
The owner of that voice was dead. Magnus turned slowly and saw Ragnar Fell, sitting across the scarred wooden table from Magnus himself, a second Magnus, a younger, less incapacitated by excruciating pain Magnus. They were both holding large tin mugs, both in extreme disarray, and both very drunk. Ragnar's white hair was snarled around his horns, like clouds that had been caught in a jet propeller. Ragnar's green cheeks were flushed dark emerald. He looked absurd. It was good to see him again. Magnus realized he was trapped inside his own memory, forced to witness. He approached Ragnar, and Ragnar reached a hand across the table. Magnus wanted to be the one his friend was reaching for. Hope was all it took. He felt his past and present selves reach toward one another, coalescing into a single body. Magnus was once again the man he had been, about to come face to face with the things he had done. Ragnar said gently,
"I'm worried about you."
Magnus waved his mug with studied carelessness, most of the contents sloshed on the table.
"I'm having fun."
"Are you really?"
asked Ragnar. The ghosts of old pain burned in him, alive and fierce for a moment. His first love, the one who had stayed, had died of old age in his arms. There had been too many attempts to find love since. He had lost too many friends already, and was too young to yet know how to deal with the loss. And there was one other thing.
"If I'm not having fun now," Magnus replied, "I just had to try harder."
"Ever since you found out who your father was, you haven't been the same."
"Of course not," said Magnus. "I've been inspired to create a cult in his honor, a cult to do all the most ridiculous things I can think of. It'll either fail spectacularly or it will be the greatest prank in history. There's no downside."
This was not the way they had spoken hundreds of years ago. But the memories had bent and changed over the years, and both he and Ragnar spoke in the words and idioms of the present day. Memory was a funny thing.
"That was meant to be a joke," said Ragnar.
Magnus pulled out his fat money pouch and upended it. Hundreds of hack silver spilled onto the table.
All the thieves in the tavern went silent. Magnus's whole life was a joke. He'd spent so long trying to prove his stepfather wrong, and now, it turned out, his father was a prince of hell. He raised his arms over his head. "Let's have a round for everyone." The room erupted with cheers. When Magnus turned back to Ragnar, he saw that even Ragnar was laughing, shaking his head and drinking deep from a fresh mug.
"Oh, well," said Ragnar, "I have been able to dissuade you from your terrible ideas, by which I mean literally all your ideas, exactly none of the time."
If Magnus could make everyone else laugh, surely he would feel like laughing himself. If he was enough fun to be around, he would never be on his own. And if he pretended he was all right, surely that would become the truth.
"All right," Ragnar continued. "Let's say you did start a joke cult. How would you go about it?"
Magnus grinned. "Oh, I have a plan. A fantastic plan." He flicked his fingers, causing electricity to spark and jump to the scattered coins on the table. "Here's what I'm going to do." The colorful wooden walls of the inn, decorated with weapons, shields, and animal heads, melted away. Ragnar, along with everyone else in the inn, turned to dust. Magnus was left looking forlornly at the empty space where his oldest friend had been. Then he was in a different room, on a different stage, in a different land, asking a crowd if they had ever felt lonely, if they had ever wanted to belong to something bigger than them. He was drinking red wine from a chalice, and as he waved a hand across the room, he saw everyone else's mugs fill with ale. Magnus called upon the name of Asmodeus, and the whole room full of people laughed with wonder and delight. The ceiling dissolved into open sky, the chandeliers into hundreds of blinking stars. The wooden floors, layered with plush rugs, turned into green grassy fields marked off by rows of manicured bushes, a fountain on one side. Magnus raised his hand and noted the champagne flute half-filled with bubbly gold.
"Great poison!" his followers chanted. "Great poison!"
Magnus made an intricate gesture, and then a table appeared filled with drinking glasses stacked in the shape of a pyramid. White wine flowed from the very top, filling each glass as it cascaded downward, creating a beautiful waterfall. A huge cheer erupted, sweeping the crowd, and the sound almost swept Magnus's heart along with it. He toasted to their recent successful raid on a corrupt count's treasure, and their distribution of the treasure to hospitals. His cultists were scrubbing city streets, feeding the poor, painting foxes blue. All in the name of Asmodeus. The cult was a joke. Life was a joke. And the fact that his life would never end was its bad punchline. Magnus walked to the giant pyre burning in the center of the gala. The crowd, who were on the edge of their seats, all linked hands and fell to their knees when the larger-than-life shape of Asmodeus appeared high above them. Magnus had spent most of the week working on this illusion and was particularly proud of the result. He expected the crowd to cheer again, but they were silent. The only sound was the crackle of flames.
"Isn't this a special occasion?"
said the giant, shimmering white Asmodeus to his faithful worshippers.
"A bunch of fools being led by the great fool, setting a puppet of me above them in a foolish parody of worship."
The gala grounds were as still as the dead after a battle. All the followers were silent on their knees.
"Oh, no. Hello, son," said Asmodeus.
The bright, dizzy whirl of motion Magnus was in jerked abruptly to a halt. He had mocked the name of Asmodeus, mocked the idea of worship. He'd wanted his actions to blaze across the sky, to fling defiance at both his fathers. Magnus had done all this because he knew that no matter whom he called, nobody was coming.
Only somebody had come. His father had come to crush him.
Magnus found himself frozen, unable to move even a finger. He could only watch as Asmodeus stepped out from the pyre and approached him, unhurried.
"Many have worshipped me," said Asmodeus, "but seldom has my name been cried so loudly by so many. It attracted my attention, and then I saw who their leader was. Trying to reach out to me, my child." Magnus tried to speak, but his jaw was clenched closed by some unknown magic. Only a thin moan slipped out from between his clenched teeth.
He met Asmodeus's eyes and shook his head very firmly. He might not be able to speak, but he wanted to make his total rejection clear. The living flames that were Asmodeus's eyes went dark for a moment.
"Thank you for collecting these followers for me," he hissed at last. "Be sure I will put them to good use."
Sweat poured down Magnus's face. Once again he fought to speak, and once more he failed. Asmodeus flashed his rows of sharp teeth.
"As for you, like any erring child, your insolence must be punished. Nor will you remember what you have done, or learn aught from it, for the memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot."
The words were from the Bible. Demons quoted Holy Scripture often, especially those with pretensions to royalty.
"No," Magnus almost begged. "Let me remember."
But Asmodeus had palmed Magnus's forehead with his bony, claw-like hand. The world washed blindingly white, and then blindingly dark. Magnus came back to himself, in the present day, kneeling before the members of his own cult, the memories his father had taken from him restored. He was on his knees. Xinyan was standing over him, leaning down so her face was very close to his.
"You'll see," she demanded. "You'll see what you have done. You'll see what you could have had."
The first emotion Magnus felt was relief. In the back of his mind, he had always worried about what he was truly capable of. He knew what he was, a demon's child, the son of hell's royalty, always afraid of his own capabilities. He'd been so afraid he might have set up this cult with evil intentions, used them for horrific purposes, perhaps erased his own memories so he would never have to face what he had done. But no, he had been a fool, but he had not been evil.
"I do see," Magnus replied softly.
The second feeling that came to him was shame. He struggled to his feet. He turned and beheld the crowd, this horde of mundanes that he had accidentally brought together and turned into cultists with an ill-conceived joke, this band of dupes, who were probably only searching for something greater than themselves, for some assurance their lives had meaning, that they were not alone in the world. Magnus remembered feeling so much pain that he forgot other people mattered. He'd made a joke of their lives. He was ashamed of it, and he wouldn't want Alec to know the person who had done it. He'd been trying to be someone different for a very long time, and, he realized, he didn't feel that savage driving pain he'd felt in that long-ago time drinking with Ragnar anymore, especially not since he met Alec. Magnus raised his head and spoke in a clear voice.
"I'm sorry."
He was met with stunned silence.
"A long time ago, I thought it would be fun to start a cult. Get a group of mundanes together to pull some pranks and play some games. I tried to make life less serious than it is. The joke went wrong. Centuries later, all of you are paying the price for my folly. For that, I am truly sorry."
"What are you doing?"
Xinyan demanded behind him.
"It's not too late," Magnus shouted. "You can all turn away from this. From demons who are not gods and the folly of immortals. Go live your lives."
"Shut up,"
Xinyan shouted over him.
These are all your worshippers, my worshippers. Their lives are ours to do with as we choose. My father is right. You are the greatest of fools, the prince of fools, and you will speak folly until someone cuts your throat. I will do it myself. I will do it for my father.
She stepped out in front of Magnus and faced the crowd.
Now is the time of destiny. Now is the time when you, my brothers and sisters, will be elevated above all others, above even the angels, answerable to none save the greatest of demons and warlocks. You will sit at the base of my father's throne.
She paused and waited expectantly, as if for a cheer of agreement. It didn't come. At the top of the stone stairs to the rear of the amphitheater, Magnus saw chaos breaking out. Cultists converged at the top of the steps and then were violently pushed back, several of them tumbling down the seats and stairs. Xinyan faltered. She motioned for the guards near the stage. The disturbance was spreading and growing louder. Magnus couldn't see what was happening. It looked like a knot of fighting, with cultists being tossed down the stairs and onto one another with abandon. The more well-armed guards near the stage were having trouble pushing through the crowd to get up to the disturbance. Magnus felt a flicker of hope. Perhaps some of the cultists had thought better of their stupid, dangerous plan. Perhaps they would fall on each other. Cultists often did. And forget about him, and about Asmodeus. Perhaps.
Apparently, said Xinyan, a blaze of orange fire gathering in her fist, I have to do everything myself.
She walked to the edge of the stage, but just as she reached the perimeter, she struck an invisible barrier and was thrown violently off her feet. The circle of salt and the moonflowers began to glow with pale fire. Magnus stiffened with realization. The moonflowers lining the edge of the stage weren't merely decorative. His eyes followed the crisscrossing lines of flowers that ran underneath the platform. Together, they formed a giant pentagram, a much larger and stronger pentagram. But who had made this one? Not Xinyan, who seemed shocked to find she was trapped within it. Xinyan picked herself up and stared at the moonflowers. She tried to leave again, only to be repelled even more forcibly the second time. She groaned and staggered to her feet. Bernard was standing just outside the pentagram, watching them with certain anticipation. Xinyan hissed at him.
What is the meaning of this?
Bernard gave her a small, mocking bow.
My sincerest apologies, cursed daughter.
The thing is, though we realize you belong to our more militant and murderous fringe, this cult has always been about hedonistic pleasure, rather than strict dedication to evil. The Crimson Hand have agreed that we do not want to obey your joyless rules, or live under your rather too stern leadership.
My, my, said Magnus mildly.
Do you disagree, Great Poison?
Asked Bernard.
By no means, Magnus said. Let the good times roll.
Xinyan was staring at Bernard, and then at the faces of the cultists sitting in rows around her. These people were not here to watch their prophet, Magnus realized. They were gathered here for a spectacle of blood and betrayal.
But I am one of you, Xinyan said forcefully. I belong with you. I am your leader.
Bernard glanced at Magnus.
With all due respect to the Great Poison, we know how easily a leader can be replaced.
What have you done?
Xinyan asked.
Bernard said, You are not the only one who can communicate with Asmodeus. You are not the only one who can summon demons to serve you.
Oh, said Magnus. Oh, no. Bernard continued with gathering triumph.
He comes when we call.
Magnus closed his eyes. Evil always does. Outside the pentagram, there were cultists screaming, demons roaring, and black shapes against the sky. Inside the pentagram, the loudest sound was Xinyan's ragged breathing.
We don't want any warlock to rule us, said Bernard. We want ultimate power, and to host the ultimate parties. So you are both imprisoned in this pentagram. and we intend to sacrifice you both to Asmodeus. No offense, Great Poison, this isn't personal. In fact, you're something of a style icon of mine. Whatever Asmodeus has promised you, he's lying, said Magnus. But Bernard sneered. Once a greater demon was summoned, he would corrupt whomever was in reach. Asmodeus offered temptation none could resist and played games crueler than mortals could dream. No wonder Bernard had looked startled when Magnus had joked about sacrificing Xin Yun. Xin Yun had never been the enemy. Xin Yun had never been the true leader of the Crimson Hand. From the moment Magnus had lost control all those years ago, it had been Asmodeus. It had always only been Asmodeus. Bernard turned away, trusting the pentagram to keep his quarry trapped. Xin Yun raced around the pentagram as if she were on fire. She tried to cast spells to break free, but it was useless. She screamed at the cultists to break the barrier, but they all watched her with the same perfect impassiveness. At last, she wheeled on Magnus and screamed, "Do something!" "Don't worry, Xin Yun. I know a spell that can break out of all but the most powerful pentagrams." Magnus waved his hands around for a second, then stopped and shrugged. "Oh, yes, I forgot. I could have broken us out, but I lost my powers because someone poisoned me." "I hate you," Xin Yun whispered. "I might add, cursed daughter is a terrible nickname," said Magnus. "Oh, you really want to talk?" Xin Yun demanded. "Great poison." "That's fair," said Magnus. "It was a pun on my name, Magnus Bane. I admit to a weakness for puns." Xin Yun gasped. A flying demon crashed to earth, landing with a horrible scream among the panicking cultists. The crowds parted, and Alec Lightwood emerged, already halfway down the amphitheater steps. Magnus felt stricken. Unexpected pain could hit in the same way, catching you off guard and rattling your whole universe, but what Magnus felt was not pain. It was a great explosion of overwhelming emotion, fear for Alec, and love and relief, and a painful, desperate joy. "Alec, my Alexander, you came for me." Cultists threw themselves at Alec, and he tossed them aside. For every one he knocked away, three took their place. They were hampering Alec's progress, but they could not stop him, and neither could any demons of the earth or the air. He was not alone, either. There was a pale-haired girl at his left and a black-haired girl at his right. Both wielded blades, keeping the throng away from Alec as he fired arrows at another demon, then swept a cultist off his feet with the base of the bow. Magnus drank in the sight of him, the strong shoulders, wild black hair, and blue eyes. Magnus had always loved this particular shade of blue, the shade of the last instant when the evening was still full of light. Magnus walked to the shimmering edge of the pentagram. There was something bright rising in him, along with love and hope. He could feel his power coming back, just out of reach. He stretched out a hand toward Alec, and his fingers were able to breach the shimmering lines of magic, passing through the magic haze as if the magic were water. When he tried to step through to Alec, though, he slammed to a stop as if the magic were a stone wall. Being able to put his fingertips outside the edge of the pentagram was not going to be very useful.
"None of this matters!"
Xin Yun's voice behind Magnus was a roar.
"My father is coming! He will strike you down, the faithless who should have been most faithful, the false prophet, the disgusting Nephilim, all of you. He will place me at his side, where I belong."
Magnus whirled, his happiness abruptly replaced by sick dread. All the color was draining from the stone around them. From the top tiers and moving downward, the stone bleached to white until it seemed to spread to the air, forming a column of white static that joined the funnel of cloud and smoke that marked the site of the ritual. A blizzard of tiny black specks flitted within the column. Wisps of smoke danced inside the light,
buzzing filled the air, a torrent of sinister whispers from another world. A voice in his head said,